From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Ever since I've been back, I'm experiencing muscle aches, joint pains, dizziness, headaches, and constant urination.
Today, shell-shocked. They served in Iraq. Have they been poisoned by the uranium in American weapons?
I have also suffered from dizziness, shortness of breath, muscle, and joint aches.
An explosive expose by Juan Gonzalez.
Our daily news investigation has found the first cases of American soldiers back from Iraq who are contaminated with depleted uranium.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Iraq, the U.S. occupation has entered a new phase as Shiite Iraqis staged an armed uprising Sunday against the occupying forces in four cities. A total of at least 50 Iraqis and 10 U.S. troops died on Sunday. Hundreds were injured. The U.S.-led occupying forces lost control of at least one city. Police stations were burned and four others. The resistance continued early today in Basra, where dozens of Shiites occupied the governor's office. The young Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr called for the uprising after the U.S. shut down one of his newspapers and arrested one of his top aides. In a statement, Sadr said, "Terrorize your enemy. God will reward you well for what pleases him. It is not possible to remain silent in front of their abuse." Writing in the London Independent, Robert Fisk says the U.S. occupation of Iraq will become untenable if the Shiite uprising continues. Fisk writes, quote, "The Americans can scarcely contain the Sunni Muslim revolt to the north. They cannot fight another community, this one representing 60% of Iraqis." Middle East analyst Juan Cole said, quote, "So far, about 60% of clashes with coalition troops had occurred in the Sunni heartland of Iraq. But the violent clashes in Najaf, Baghdad, Amara, and Nasiriyah may signal the beginning of a second phase in which the U.S. faces a two-front war against both Sunni radicals in the center-north and Shiite militias in the south." On the Sunni front, U.S. troops have sealed off the Sunni Muslim town of Fallujah, where four U.S. military contractors were brutally killed last week. The Los Angeles Times reports the U.S. is preparing to launch its largest offensive since the fall of Baghdad. Seven Iraqis and one Marine have already died in early fighting. The worst violence Sunday was in the city of Kufa, near the Shiite holy city of Najaf, and in the section of Baghdad known as Sadr City. In Kufa, at least 22 people died and as many as 200 were injured in a three-hour gun battle that began when followers of Sadr and Spanish troops exchanged gunfire. The dead included at least 20 Iraqis, one American, and one Salvadoran troop. In Sadr City, seven U.S. troops were killed, as well as 28 Iraqis. Thousands more followers of Sadr protested in Baghdad, Nasiriyah, and Basra. The BBC reports the clashes mark the most serious confrontation to date between the occupation forces and members of Iraq's Shiite majority. On Sunday, the Republican chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, Senator Richard Lugar of Indiana, said on ABC's This Week that the U.S. may be forced to delay handing over power to Iraqis on June 30th and that the U.S. may be forced to send more troops to quell the violence. Hints of the uprising that would start on Sunday emerged in the days prior. On Saturday, 5,000 supporters of Sadr marched through East Baghdad protesting the United States for closing down the Al-Hawza newspaper. On Friday, the Miami Herald reported 20,000 Shiites protested outside the U.S. occupation headquarters in Baghdad, marking the largest protest there to date. A sheikh representing Sadr told the crowd, quote, "We fought Saddam, and now we're fighting the Americans. Listen, America, Britain, and Israel. There's a man named Muqtada Sadr, and he gives resistance fighters their courage," he said. In other Iraq news, the New York Daily News reported Sunday in a major expose by Juan Gonzalez that four soldiers of the New York National Guard tested positive for depleted uranium contamination after returning home from Iraq. They're the first confirmed cases of inhaled depleted uranium exposure from the current Iraq conflict. Army officials at Fort Dix and Walter Reed Army Medical Center are now rushing to test all returning members of the 442nd. We'll be talking to three of the soldiers in just a few minutes. A 25,000-word exposé in the May issue of Vanity Fair reports President Bush first asked British Prime Minister Tony Blair to support the removal of Saddam Hussein from power at a private White House dinner 9 days after the September 11th attacks. The source of the article is Sir Christopher Meyer, the former British ambassador to Washington, who was at the dinner with Blair. In addition, Vanity Fair reports Blair helped force the United States to go to the United Nations because Blair warned that he could be toppled from power if the Allies did not do so. The Associated Press is reporting the Bush administration has packed the press office of the Iraq Coalition Provisional Authority with Republican operatives. Critics say the press office is so partisan that it is seen as an outpost of Bush's reelection effort. One of the main goals of the office, known as Stratcom, has been to shed light on the positive side of the Iraq occupation. One press release from late March read, "Beautification plan for Baghdad ready to begin." Another statement last month warned, "The reality is nothing like what you see on television." The office is headed by Dan Senor, a former press secretary for Spencer Abraham, the Michigan Republican who is now energy secretary. Senor formerly worked with the Carlyle Group. Meanwhile, Rich Galen, the former press secretary of former House Speaker Newt Gingrich and former Vice President Dan Quayle, oversees sending daily news releases directly to media outlets in the United States. One former CPA contractor said, "Iraq is in danger of costing George W. Bush his presidency, and the CPA's media staff are determined to see that does not happen." In a joint television interview, the chair and vice chair of the 9/11 Commission indicated Sunday that the panel has gathered evidence that shows the September 11th attacks probably could have been prevented. The vice chair, Lee Hamilton, said, quote, "There are lots of ifs. You can string together a whole bunch of ifs. If things had broken right in all kinds of different ways, as the governor has identified, and frankly, if you'd had a little luck, it probably could have been prevented." The chair of the commission, Thomas Kane, also warned Sunday he could not guarantee the panel's report will be released before the presidential election because of a protracted White House vetting process. In related news, the Bush administration reversed itself on Friday and said the 9/11 Commission would be allowed to view thousands of classified documents handed over by President Clinton. It is not clear if the commissioners will be allowed to keep copies of the documents or if they'll be allowed only to view the papers. Newsweek is reporting a federal investigation into the bank accounts of the Saudi embassy in Washington has identified more than $27 million in suspicious transactions, including hundreds of thousands of dollars paid to Muslim charities and to clerics and Saudi students who are being scrutinized for possible links to terrorist activity. Riggs Bank of Washington recently dropped the Saudis as a client. According to the Newsweek probe, a probe by the FBI and Treasury Department is one of the most sensitive financial inquiries now being conducted by the government and is being closely monitored by the White House. The 9/11 Commission has also been briefed on developments. In Britain, TV announcer Anna Richardson has announced she plans to sue the governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, for making unwanted sexual advances towards her. During a pre-recorded television interview in 2000, she charges Schwarzenegger pulled her onto his knee and squeezed her nipple. Meanwhile, the actor has reportedly agreed to undergo training on how to avoid sexual harassment. United Nations Commission on Human Rights has issued a report criticizing the New York and Oakland police for abusing the human rights of anti-war protesters last year. This marks the first time in at least 5 years that the U.S. was cited in the annual human rights report. Other nations criticized included Indonesia, Burundi, China, Pakistan, and Egypt. Oakland police shot wooden plugs and beanbags at anti-war demonstrators during a protest last year along the city's docks. During the February 15th anti-war protest last year, the New York police charged into protesters with horses, beat protesters with batons, and indiscriminately fired pepper spray. Richard Nixon's former counsel John Dean is charging in a new book out this week that the crimes of President Bush are worse than his previous boss and are grounds for impeachment. Dean served prison for his role in the Watergate scandal. His new book is titled Worse Than Watergate, The Secret Presidency of George W. Bush. Dean will be joining us on Democracy Now! On Tuesday.
But he had seen the mountaintop. And he knew he could not stop. Always living with the threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better stop and think. Everybody knows we're on the brink. What will happen now that the king? Tears, but it won't change a thing. Teach your people, will they ever learn? Must you always kill with burn and burn with guns?
Nina Simone singing "The King of Love is Dead" on this day after the anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Welcome.
And good day to all of our listeners and viewers around the country.
Well, 10 U.S. soldiers and at least 50 Iraqis were killed in one of the most turbulent days yet in U.S.-occupied Iraq. The number of U.S. troops killed since Washington's invasion is now over 600, and the number of casualties in just 1 year is an astonishing 12,000. That figure does not include a hidden casualty that, up until last week, had gone unnoticed: exposure to depleted uranium. Today, an explosive expose by Juan Gonzalez and the New York Daily News. Congratulations, Juan, for
Thank
this
you.
Report.
And yes, Amy, we've our report, which we've been working on for several months, found the first four of nine soldiers from the 442nd Military Police of the New York National Guard were found with depleted uranium, contaminated with depleted uranium. They are the first confirmed cases of inhaled depleted uranium exposure from the current Iraq conflict. Army officials at Fort Dix and Walter Reed Army Medical Center are now rushing to test all returning members of the 442nd. More than a dozen members are back in the U.S., but the rest of the company, mostly comprised of New York City cops, firefighters, and correction officials, is not due to return from Iraq until later this month. After learning of the news investigation, Senator Hillary Clinton of New York blasted Pentagon officials yesterday for not properly screening soldiers returning from Iraq. Clinton, a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, said she will write to Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld demanding answers and soon will introduce legislation to require health screening for all returning troops. Depleted uranium is considered to be the most effective anti-tank weapon ever devised. It is made from nuclear waste left over from the making of nuclear weapons and fuel. The public first became aware of the U.S. military was using DU weapons during the Persian Gulf War in 1991, but it had been used as far back as 1973 during the Yom Kippur War in Israel. Amid growing controversy in Europe and Japan, the European Parliament called last year for a moratorium on its use.
Today we're joined by three soldiers who came home sick from Iraq. We're going to begin with Sergeant Agustin Matos. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you. Good morning.
It's very good to have you with us. Can you talk about what happened to you in Iraq?
Basically, we were living in areas that were bombed out or very dirty. As far as we lived in one train station in Samawa, where it was filled with bird droppings and grease pits and asbestos from breaks. And we were forced to clean these areas because we have to live in them. And as far as dust was concerned and sandstorms, there were constantly. Every time you went out on missions and came back, all your equipment, all your gear was filled with sand. Sometimes you slept and woke up, you had sand behind your ears, sand in your nose, everywhere.
And one of the things that, in the process of talking to several of you, you had one of the medics, Sergeant Juan Vega, who told me when you got to Samawa, sometime was it in June of last year, that suddenly a lot of men in the company started coming down with similar symptoms. He had as many as a dozen of the 160 member company had high fevers and kidney stones and urinating in the blood for many of the soldiers. Could you talk some of you about what happened there in Samawa?
Well, I myself, while I was out there, experienced a fever one night. Unexplained, I was fine during the day, and then it just hit me. It just totally knocked me out. I was in bed. I couldn't get out. I can't remember exactly what the fevers were, but also I had I was urinating blood while I was out there. It wasn't good. It was just a place not to be when you were sick like that.
Where were you?
We were out in Samawa.
Which is how close to Baghdad?
I say it was about 40-minute ride to an hour ride.
And Juan, how did you first hear about the story?
Well, I initially got a call back in, I'd say, mid-November from the mother of a soldier who is still there, actually, and who had come back because his grandfather had died for a few days for the burial, but who was sick, and he hadn't been shipped out. She was concerned about him. He eventually went back to Iraq because the whole company is not due to return until April 23rd, is it? It's coming back?
Anytime after the 17th.
Right. But then she told me, you know, there's a whole bunch of others from the same company that are at Fort Dix who are also having all kinds of problems. So she put me in touch with them, and one by one I started meeting with some of the soldiers and finding that they had very similar types of complaints about their physical conditions, a lot of kidney problems, either urination or blood in the urine or kidney stones, which is a sign of depleted uranium, because uranium as a heavy metal attacks the kidney as one of the first organs. So I talked to several of the men about the possibility of their getting some independent testing because they were having trouble with the military dealing with their testing. I don't know, maybe Sergeant Herbert Reed, who is also one of the men, might want to talk about the problems that you had. You were one of the few that actually did get tested, but what were the problems in getting the results?
Well, what happened was it was several of us that went to Walter Reed to be tested, and he had to fill out a survey, but a lot of us were turned away. I was tested in early December when we submitted the specimen back to Walter Reed, but after numerous tries to retrieve the results, we were told they hadn't come back. Just recently, last week, we went to back to the office to get the results, and we met with this colonel who told us that they still hadn't returned. But they made a telephone call to the lab, and the lab indicated to them that all the results had been completed, and they didn't know why ours hadn't reached Walter Reed yet. So he told them to send him an email, and he would get him the results. And about an hour later, we were telephoned that they had our results and that myself, Specialist Phillips, and Sergeant Ruiz had came back negative. But I was positive for 6.1 nanograms of uranium and 6.0 nanograms of, correlate? I think it's like that.
Now, Sergeant Herbert Reed, you're Assistant Deputy Warden at Rikers Island.
Yes, I am.
And the 442nd Military Police Company is of the New York Army National Guard is made up of what? Cops, correction guards, firefighters. And Augustine, what do you do?
I'm a New York City Correctional Officer. I work right close to here.
In the tombs.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. We're going to break, and when we come back, we're going to also hear from Hector Vega, who is with us, who has tested positive in this Daily News special investigation also for depleted uranium. Again, upon reading this investigation, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton of New York is calling for all soldiers returning from Iraq to be tested.
Yes. Yes, and she says she's going to introduce legislation on it this week.
Now, she's done that before, is that right? Or well, she has at least called for some kind of
question. Well, she spoke to me yesterday, and she said that last spring she met with the Pentagon as a member of the Armed Services Committee and specifically asked them, what are you doing about the soldiers that are going over there in terms of their health and specifically in terms of depleted uranium? And she was told at the time that that all the soldiers were going to be screened when they were coming back. So that's why now she's so angry that she had been told one thing, but now she's finding out that a lot of these soldiers are having trouble getting tested or screened when they have ailments.
This is Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute. This is Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez as we continue with this Daily News expose. Juan Gonzalez's special investigation that is cover story of the New York Daily News yesterday with the headline Shell-Shocked, and today another cover story with the headline Uranium Ammo Fuhrer, Army Tests Them All. Juan, very interesting results of this response to the investigation yesterday. The Army announcing, after you first called them last week, that they will be testing everyone from the 442nd. Is that right?
Yes. Well, they haven't actually announced it. They just did it. Last week, after we started inquiring, they sent a couple of colonels down from Walter Reed to Fort Dix and called all the men from the 442nd in and said, look, we're going to test you all. We're going to do everything possible to find out if you've got any problems. But this is after months. Some of them have been asking for depleted uranium testing for months and have gotten no response.
Juan, why don't you introduce Dr. Asif Jurakovich, a guest we have had on before on Democracy Now!, talking about depleted uranium and the role he played in your investigation.
Yes, well, what happened is when we first began to get a sense that these soldiers might have some common problem, I contacted Dr. Asif Jurakovich, who is a Gulf War veteran, a colonel in the Army Reserves, and who is an expert in depleted uranium. He was one of the first doctors he worked at a Veterans Administration hospital in Wilmington in the mid-90s who identified soldiers contaminated with depleted uranium. And we asked Dr. Jurakovich if he would do some independent testing of the soldiers if they would volunteer to do so. And he did. And a couple of months ago, we did examinations of the soldiers. He took urine samples of them, and then we had them analyzed at a laboratory at Goethe University in Frankfurt. And I'd like to welcome Dr. Jurakovich to Democracy Now!
Thank you.
Dr. Durakovich, it's good to have you with us.
It's good to be back.
Can I start off by asking, why did you have to send the samples to Germany?
Well, our first laboratory for determination of uranium isotopes was in Newfoundland, Canada. And after our first results were published, the laboratory was closed, and a scientist who was operating the lab and doing studies for us was fired. So we went from Canada to England, and we continued at the British Geological Survey. And then from England, we went to Frankfurt because of my personal connections with an outstanding scientist, Dr. Axel Gerdes, who is head of the mass spec laboratory at Goethe University in Frankfurt. This is one of the best laboratories in the world for determination of actinides, especially uranium isotopes.
And Dr. Durakovich, could you talk a little bit about what because one of the things that there's of concern now is that the Army is saying they're going to test all the soldiers, but there is a question of as to the sophistication and the kind of testing that they do as to whether they're actually going to get results or not, or whether they're going to be able to essentially clean the slate without really identifying whether these men are contaminated with DU. Could you talk a little bit about the kind of testing that's necessary?
Well, all the results that were done by the government so far are inferior because methodology used was inferior methodology, which could not distinguish between different isotopes of uranium. Most of the studies done by the government teams included total uranium, and most of those studies did not include ratio between uranium-238 and 235, which is the single most important factor in determining depleted uranium contamination. In addition, government studies could not or did not want to perform the analysis of uranium-236, which, although in very small quantities, indicates that uranium in the patients we are studying or they are studying is not natural. Uranium-236 does not exist in nature. And we have been able to determine uranium-236 in the urine of current group of American soldiers. So question is, what is government doing about testing of the people from Iraqi conflict? I would say that studies have not been scientifically sound in most of the cases and most of the reports. And the fact that they are going to start studies now on the large groups of the Iraqi veterans are a bit too late. Because question that I ask everybody is, why does not the government of the United States, which has funding and equipment and universities and laboratories, why are they not capable of doing proper studies? Why is independent institution like our Uranium Medical Research Center capable of doing it and government is not capable? It is either desire not to present the true story to the public or plain government incompetence, of which I'm very familiar because I worked in the government scientific and healthcare facilities. I don't know the answer to it, but I do know the fact that it's a little bit too late to start these studies after our work has been presented already in the public.
Dr. Durakovich, just to clarify, you are a veteran of the Persian Gulf War, and you worked for the U.S. government.
Of course, I did. I advanced from the ranks of captain to the colonel in the United States Army. I hold the rank of the U.S. Army colonel, for which I am quite proud. And my work is dedicated to help the soldiers and the veterans of the United States and other countries, as well as to help civilians who are contaminated with uranium isotopes.
So why are you not still working for the U.S. government investigating the effects of depleted uranium?
I was fired in the year 1997 because after the Persian Gulf War I, I was approached by the officials of the different departments of the U.S. government who asked me to stop my work on the depleted uranium, which I obviously could not agree with because I was mandated by the government of the U.S. to take care of my patients. And I was the head of nuclear medicine department at a VA hospital in Wilmington, Delaware. So when I discovered high percent of contamination with DU of the Gulf War I veterans, every effort was made to stop my work, which I obviously couldn't. I'm a medical doctor, and my responsibility is for the well-being of my patients. So in 1997, I was fired. I lost my job after 19 years service for the government of the United States.
And Dr. Durakovich, in terms of this whole issue, I spoke with the Pentagon, with Dr. Michael Kilpatrick, who is in charge of a lot of the health services for the Pentagon, who insisted that all of the Army's tests have shown, number one, that only soldiers who have shrapnel wounds or who were with inside tanks that were hit with depleted uranium shells are in danger of exposure to DU, and that even those soldiers, in about 70 of them that the Army has been following up since the Persian Gulf War or since shortly after the Persian Gulf War, that none of them have gotten sick, so that, one, you have to be very close to a DU shell exploding to be able to be exposed, and two, even if you are exposed, there's no proof that you're going to get sick from it. What's your response to that?
My response is very simple. Out of 9 patients whom I examined in the current report from the New York Daily News, some of them were very sick indeed. And their sicknesses are containing the same symptoms as the symptoms of contaminated veterans from the Persian Gulf War I, and also similar to the symptoms of the contaminated veterans from the Balkan conflict. So the fact that the Pentagon is insisting that soldiers are not sick does not surprise me, because I'd like to see how those patients were selected. Was it random selection, or was it selection by the symptoms? To say that shrapnel wounds are the main source that would contribute to the illnesses of exposed soldiers is plain nonsense, because we know that shrapnel does not wound too many soldiers. And we also know that shrapnel does indeed cause internal contamination, but it is really focusing our attention to the outside issues, because main issue is contamination by the respiratory pathway, by breathing. When uranium shell hits the tank or hits the target, radioactive dust is formed, and billions upon billions of the submicroscopic micrometer particles are released into the air, baked on the particles of dust, and inhaled by people in the area, whether they're military or civilians. So shrapnel really is not an important issue. Important issue is the mass contamination by the inhalation of the radioactive dust. That is my answer.
And we're also joined, Dr. Durakovich, by Leonard Dietz, who's on the phone, who was a longtime nuclear scientist, more than 30 years at the Knowles Atomic Laboratory, and who actually discovered something that contradicts much of what the Pentagon is even saying right now. I'd like to welcome Professor Dietz.
Yes, hello.
Professor, I'd like to ask you, because the Pentagon insists that that this radioactive dust that's emitted, it's because it's twice as heavy as lead, it's going to fall to the ground and it doesn't disperse or move around, so that there's no danger except in the immediate spot of a exploded DU shell. Could you talk to our listeners about your research and what you found back over 20 years ago?
I was a physicist, and I worked at the Knowles Atomic Power Laboratory in Schenectady, New York, for 28 years. In 1979, we accidentally discovered the emissions of depleted uranium particles from the National Lead Industries site in Colony, which is on the western boundary of the city of Albany, New York. And this is 10 miles from the Knowles site. The particles were in 16 different air filters that we analyzed. Three of the air filters were exposed for 1 month each at West Melton, New York, where a naval training site is, and it's 42 kilometers. The transport of these tiny particles, which indeed do have the density of lead, are unlimited. For example, at the 10-mile distance, we isolated four individual uranium particles that were proved to be pure depleted uranium in our mass spectrometers, mass spectrometer analyses. And they were of the size that is slightly below, they were 4 to 6 micrometers in size, irregularly shaped particles except for one, which was a perfect sphere of 3.8 micrometers diameter. And these are slightly below the size of what are called the respirable size particles. In other words, you can inhale them into your lungs. They will be there for many years. The particles these large particles at the 10-mile distance had unlimited range. It depends on the atmospheric conditions of how the wind is blowing and what the specific conditions are. For example, a 1 micrometer diameter uranium dioxide particle with the density of lead falls at the rate in still air of 4 feet per hour. A 1.5 micrometer diameter particle falls at the rate of 1 foot per hour. Both of these sized particles are literally floating in the air. So when the military says that they fall out in within a range of 50 meters or so from a tank that's been hit by a depleted uranium penetrator, it's just not true at all. They have unlimited range. They could go hundreds and hundreds of miles.
And your sense from seeing the reports of the sandstorms that were constantly bedeviling the troops in Iraq in terms of the capacity of some of that DU to travel?
The particles attach themselves to dust particles or silicon dioxide, which is dirt particles, and they can become resuspended in air. So that when you have these sandstorms in the Persian Gulf region, that just spreads it all around the country. For example, Furial Bourabi, who was a Kuwaiti scientist in 1992 and 1993, took samples of the desert soil and analyzed them in the laboratory in Kuwait using mass spectrometry. And it is clear from his mass spectrometer results that the depleted uranium, which we estimate was produced about 10 metric tons of these particles in Kuwait, were spread all over Kuwait within 2 to 3 years.
I want to ask Dr. Jurakovich a question before he has to leave. Juan writes in his expose in the New York Daily News yesterday and today that in August, a contingent of Dutch soldiers arrived in Samoa to replace the Americans. Press reports in the Netherlands revealed that Dutch authorities questioned the U.S. beforehand about the possible use of DU contamination or DU ammunition in Samoa. According to Sergeant Juan Vega, senior medic for the 442nd, the Dutch swept the area around the train depot with Geiger counters, and their medics confided to him they found high radiation levels. The Dutch unit refused to stay in the depot, Vega said, and pitched camp in the desert instead. And in February, after Japanese troops moved into the same town, a Japanese journalist equipped with a Geiger counter reported finding radiation readings 300 times higher than background levels. What does that mean for these men?
Well, it is very simple to answer this question. The areas which are as highly contaminated with uranium isotopes as Samoa should really be off the limits for either active duty or civilian personnel until or unless the area is cleaned to acceptable levels of radiation. I, incidentally, am going next week to Japan because I'm giving a presentation of my current findings to Japanese Parliament. And I'm also doing some studies of plutonium in American soldiers' urine. I'm going to be asked in Tokyo, what is significance of Samoa region deployments to Japanese soldiers? And I simply have to tell the truth, that if the area is unfit for the Dutch soldiers, it is equally unfit for the soldiers of the United States or Japan to do active duty work in the highly contaminated area. Our soldiers from Samoa, nine military police personnel, show close to 50% of DU contamination in their urine, which means it is not fictitious. It is actual physical evidence of actinide contamination of the soldiers who were not even involved in the active battles in the front line. That is very simple to conclude that areas that are highly contaminated have to be surveyed, have to be followed up, and have to be declared fit or unfit for the work of the civilian or military authorities.
What does this mean for these men? What is their prognosis?
Perhaps we have that connection. Could you please repeat it?
What is the readings, what is the finding of depleted uranium, even of U-236, mean for the men? What is their prognosis?
Well, prognosis is still being debated in the scientific literature. I can tell you what the government of the United States studies indicate. At the Armed Forces Radiobiology Research Institute in Bethesda, Maryland, studies were done that confirm carcinogenesis of depleted uranium, which means depleted uranium isotopes in the cell culture show transformation of the immature cells of the human tissues into cancer cells, which means carcinogenesis or capacity to cause cancer is definitely proven in the scientific experiments. Genetic changes are definitely proven by the studies that were done on my patients from the Gulf War I at the University of Bremen in Germany, where scientists confirmed significant changes in the chromosomal structure in the patients who were referred to them for the chromosomal analysis. Immune system can be affected, reproductive system can be affected, central nervous system can be affected, and many tissues, kidneys, obviously, because of the chemical toxicity of uranium. So we are talking about multi-organ risk to the people who are contaminated with uranium isotopes. And how realistic is that risk? We don't know, because epidemiological studies have been either insufficient or not even started in even at the institutions like World Health Organization. We don't know practical implications of the levels of contamination we are dealing with now, but we do know that science has no contradiction about harmful effects of uranium isotopes in the human body.
Doctor,
the doses that you were asking about cannot be really determined without many studies to be conducted in the future.
Dr. Asif Durakovich, we want to thank you very much for being with us. We know that you have to leave, and we thank you for this report. But we're going to stay with our guests, the men from the 442nd. Again, the 442nd of the New York Army National Guard, Juan Gonzalez's special investigation in the New York Daily News yesterday and today, front page stories, where the Daily News tested nine men returned from Iraq, four of the nine testing positive for depleted uranium, and the other five not off the hook. The other five, some of them having raised levels of uranium-236, and we're going to talk with them also, Dr. Dietz, when we return. This is Democracy Now! Our website is democracynow.org, as we broadcast on more than 200 radio and television stations around the country. Stay with us.
My farm, my town down. I've got to know, friend, I've got to know why. Why do your ships haul death to my people? Nitro blockbusters, big cannons and guns. Why can't your ships haul food and some clothing? I've got to know, yes, I've got to know why. I've got to know, yes, I've got to know, friend. Hungry lips ask me wherever I go. Comrades and friends all falling around us. I've got to know, yes, I've got to know. What good work did you do? I've got to ask you to give you the money right out of my hand.
Paul Kamm and Eleanor McDonald singing I've Got to Know by Woody Guthrie. This is Democracy Now! The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez with Juan's explosive expose in the New York Daily News yesterday and today called Shell Shocked. Yes, the story of men. The headline, they served us in Iraq. Have they been poisoned by the uranium in our own ammunition? And our guests today in the studio are three men from the 442nd. They are Sergeant Agustin Matos, Sergeant Hector Vega, as well as Sergeant Herbert Reed. Herbert Reed, Assistant Deputy Warden at Rikers Island in New York. Agustin Matos is a corrections officer at the Tombs here in New York. And Hector Vega, who we have not spoken with. Sergeant Vega, what do you do in New York?
I'm a retired postal worker. And, right now, temporarily, I'm working in Manhattan in a high-rise building.
And what happened to you in Iraq? How do you feel now? What about the tests that the New York Daily News did on you?
Well, I got wind of it from Juan Vega a few months back, and he told me that it was possible I might be tested positive. So to get tested, and I didn't know nothing about this until he spoke to me. But I was suffering through headaches and urinating problems, and lately I've been having a lot of like rashes and itching, you know, itching a lot. So, and then when I was told that I was tested positive, it was very, very concerning.
Well, what did you know about depleted uranium when you went to Iraq, when you came out? Because I know in the conversations we had when you were in Iraq, you would like to shoot photographs. So quite a few times you went up to shot up Iraqi tanks and were shooting photographs. So then what did the Army tell you?
I knew nothing about this. I found out about this back here in Fort Dix. And Juan Vega has been keeping me in touch with all what's going on. I didn't know nothing. We went up, you know, and we saw these tanks, and we just took pictures of them.
And Augie Matos, you were telling me that when you at Fort Dix, when they called you in last week, they were telling you all that you were supposed to have gotten training video about depleted uranium.
Right. They were talking about this video that they kept on referring to. If we saw the video, we go through a process of being certified before we go away on deployment. You go to the ranges, you go out and perform your tasks as a soldier, and you have to pass them. At no time did we ever see a tape regarding depleted uranium informing us what to do if we saw a tank or anything.
Did you know about the Dutch and the Japanese that followed? Did you know about these Geiger counter tests and the fact that the Dutch were so concerned that they wouldn't even sleep where you slept? They went out and pitched their tents in the desert?
The Dutch came into Samoa right before we left to go to Alhilla. And when they came in that first week, almost 50% of their soldiers went down with unexplainable, diarrhea. They were going to the bathroom a lot. They were walking around like zombies with actual IV bags, and they had to be helped to the bathroom.
Were you with them then?
They were in the same base camp until their base camp was built outside, because they refused to be there, but they had to stay somewhere until the construction was done. So where they had a nice air-conditioned room and everything, and they just went down. I mean, they to the point where they were incapacitated. They couldn't do any kind of missions.
So what did you think?
At first, I was saying, wow, maybe it's the heat that's getting to them or the change in food, because when we all got there, we all had the same symptoms. Right away, our stomachs and nobody wanted to eat, and the heat was intense, and we just started going to the bathroom a lot, and everybody started coming down with stones. And I just figured it was due to the heat. I had no idea. I only found out about them testing the soil when I got back to Fort Dix.
And how long have you all been in the National Guard?
I have 20 years as of February 22nd. I joined military since I was 17.
And when are you going to retire?
I'm going through my board process now. Now, because of my injuries that I sustained in Iraq, they consider me I can't be in the military anymore. So I don't fit medical standards. Well, it's well and good anyway, because I have 20 years as of February 22nd, and I'm being processed out now.
And Herb Reed?
I have 8 years of active Army, and I was in the Coast Guard for about 10 years. And I just recently transferred over to the Army National Guard. So I've been in about 2 years in the Army National Guard.
And Hector?
I have 27 years in. I just completed 27 years, March 28th.
And how do you feel about the military's treatment of you? I understand some people who've been participating in this investigation have really been called on the carpet. Like, why did they turn to an outside tester rather than inside the military? Why did you participate in this? Why didn't you stay with the Pentagon and let them take care of you?
Because we were being frustrated. Every time you turned around and you asked to be treated for something, they just gave you more medication instead of seeing doctors. When you proposed to them that you this was hurting or that was hurting, they said, okay, we're going to take care of one thing at a time, one thing at a time. And they never got to the next thing. So when we reached out to Juan Gonzalez, we were happy that the Daily News was going to test us.
Are you facing pressure right now?
Well, I'm on leave right now, so I don't know. I guess I'll find out when I get back.
We probably will face pressure when we get back. But my point is this. I've been asking to get tested since October, okay? They looked at me like I had two heads when I told them I wanted to get tested for depleted uranium. They actually told us at one point that there was no such test for depleted uranium. And when Sergeant Reed went to Walter Reed on his own and actually went and inquired about it, and I guess they gave him a test because they were tired of seeing him. Okay, whether he got his results on time or whether the results are accurate, who knows? But my thing is this. I was very upset because I came down with an episode of urinating blood while I was at Fort Dix, and then they found a 2.5-centimeter lesion in my liver unexplainably. Now, all of a sudden, they're rushing to try and check to see if it's cancerous. Walter Reed Hospital told me it was benign. It wasn't cancerous. But the fishy thing about it is my wife came down just last month with abdominal pain, severe abdominal pains, that I had to take her to the hospital. She got tested. They thought it was stones. They put her on Vicodin and painkillers and as far as antibiotic. and they're still trying to find out what was it that caused it. So now I'm waiting to go to the doctor for her, find out what happened.
In terms of the rest of the company, the rest of the company is still, I think they just left Iraq this week, and they're on their way being processed to come back to the United States.
About how many of them are there?
There's, 160 or so in the company?
Right, it's about 150, because some of them are back here now.
Were they all in Samoa?
They were all the same places we were. They're all in Kuwait right now, and they should be coming anytime after the 17th.
Have you had any contact with those folks downrange in the company about what's going on with you guys and with the results? Or?
I tried not to explain what was going on back here, not to get them excited or concerned, because they need to be focusing on being safe and doing what they have to do. They noticed it in my voice, a couple of my friends, and they kept on asking me what was wrong. I had 3 phone calls from different friends of mine on 3 different occasions, and all of them wanted to know what was happening. I finally broke down and told one guy, he's another correction officer, his name Frank Morales. I told him about it because I know he was able to keep a secret. And I told him, don't tell anybody about it. When you guys get back, then we'll discuss it. Then I received another call from another friend of mine. His name is Bobby Matthew, and he told me that it was told in a meeting out there that members that are from the unit back here in Fort Dix tested positive, and that now they're going to be testing the whole unit when they get back. So now they were calling me up frantic. What is this thing about this DU? You know, what did we get exposed to out here? What's going to happen to us? It's like I'm up in the air as you are right now, but we're trying to get this done so when the whole unit comes back, they get tested. They have a 4-day process window to actually process out of Fort Dix. In those 4 days, you know, they've been out there for over a year. They're not going to want to stay around and get these tests. They want to go back home and see their family. So now, at least supposedly, when they get back, all they have to do is ask for the test, and they'll test them, and then notify them of the results later.
But my concerns are, you know,
Sergeant Herbert Reed.
I have 2 young children, and although I tested low for depleted uranium, which is what 138.9, I still tested positive. Now, I also tested positive for U-236. My thing is, you know, what is this doing to me? You know, am I going to be able to pass this on to my wife or my children? So I'm going to my local physician, and I'm going to have the biopsy done that was recommended by Dr. Darakovich.
Juan, you write the interviews you've done, the soldiers talking about 2 Iraqi tanks, 1 all shot up, had been hauled onto flatbed railroad cars less than 100 yards from where the company slept. This raises also questions about Iraqi civilians. You're talking about a whole country that's been shot up, and depleted uranium has been used extensively. What do you think this means for them? And does it matter to you?
Yes, it matters. I mean, we're all human beings. I don't know if they're suffering from any of the symptoms that we're having. We worked very closely with them while we were there. I can only attest to, you know, my symptoms right now.
If we're feeling like this now, and they're living in that country, I could imagine that their symptoms are probably much worse than what we are. Mm-hmm. Now, you just have to think about it. 1991, I didn't deploy in 1991 out there. They went through it. They went through the bombings. Now, as far as this war, they're going through it again, plus all those years, those 12 years they were living in that stuff. I was only out there maybe 7 months, and I came back, and I'm already having shortness of breath and stuff. So whatever I'm feeling, I'm pretty sure theirs is magnified.
Do you ever go through a day where you feel like you did before you went to Iraq?
No. Ever since I came back, I've been so different as far as my demeanor. I was always an energetic person. I stay awake to the very last minute, maybe 4 or 5 hours of sleep, and go right to work. I live out on Long Island. My commute is on... I'm on a 406 train coming into Manhattan, and
I want to thank you all very much for being with us. We'll continue to follow the story. And Juan, thanks so much for this explosive expose in the New York Daily News. Sergeant Agustin Matos, Sergeant Hector Vega, and Sergeant Herbert Reed. That does it for the program. I look forward to seeing folks at Lemoyne College in Syracuse tonight. And on August 13th, the launch of the Exception to the Rulers book and media tour will start in New York at Cooper Union at 7 o'clock. And you can call us at 212-431-9090. A very special thanks to Angie Karen, who started this investigation, Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkadus, Anna Nogueira, Elizabeth Press, John Hamilton, Jeremy Scahill. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.